Welcome to Storybrooke.
Enjoy your stay.
Welcome to Once Upon a High People's Once Upon a Time podcast. I'm Jen, and tonight I'm joined by Laura and Brittany. Hey guys, what's going on?
Hey, hello.
Hello.
All right, so we are going to discuss the very, very satisfying episode of Once Upon a Time that just aired. And I know Laura is extremely happy, but we're going to try to contain her until the appropriate time for the discussion. Do you think you can do it, Laura?
I'll try.
Okay.
I'll try. Okay.
So, Laura, clearly a thumbs up for you.
I have to say, I was very thumbs uppy all about the Robin Hood stuff, which, of course, obviously everyone is going to find wildly stunning, I know. Other than the Robin Hood stuff, I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. I'm still not really on Team Frozen. But yes, big thumbs up for the Robin Hood sections.
Okay, and Brittany, how about you?
I am a huge thumbs up for Elizabeth Mitchell's acting and a thumb sideways for the rest of the episode.
Okay. I'm kind of leaning more towards a thumbs up than a thumb sideways. I think there were some really interesting things that we learned this episode, even though it didn't feel as cohesive as it should have been, maybe. But I did like what was going on, and I'm really hoping that next week's two-hour mid-season finale kind of gives us a little bit more of what we're looking for. So fingers crossed for that. All right, let's talk a little bit about favorite quotes, because I think there were some really, really lovely things that happened this episode. All right, Laura, go ahead.
And I have to say, I was torn. I was definitely torn between the quote I went with and the quote from The Knave from Will Scarlet. But I went with this one. I know, again, just bear with me, guys, because there are gifts everywhere, and I love it. And it's when Robin Hood comes in all angst-ridden, and he says, "I have lived by a code my entire life. Steal from the rich and give to the poor. Be truthful, righteous, and good, and I have tried to live by that code every day of my life." Regina says, "Then why are you here?" And he says, "'Cause today is not one of those days." And there. Yeah, that was it. Boom. The great kiss. And yes, I can't even believe I'm not upset it wasn't with Marion. So yeah, that was me. That was, yeah. Gotta love it. Although I did really like the whole routine with the knave and Robin Hood at Granny's about it being like the 13 dozen and one. I thought that was pretty hilarious, too.
All right, Brittany, speaking of the knave, I believe you have a little Will Scarlet quote for us.
I do. So when it's during the same scene that Laura was just talking about before her quote, where they're sitting going over how Robin met Marion. And at the end of their conversation, Will says, "Nate, when you find someone you love enough to ruin your life for, it's always worth it." And I thought that just spoke a lot about Will Scarlet's past, and hopefully we'll learn more about what happened later on.
Yes, please. I'm still dying to know. I really thought we were going to get something last night.
I know. I thought so, too.
Oh, so mad.
So I really liked how it played, laying like the groundwork for him to talk about his past, hopefully sooner rather than later, and then...
Right. And why all the Neverland characters have... Not Netherland, sorry. Why all the Wonderland characters have not popped up. Like, he's the only one. Aside from, like, the obvious, he was the big TV draw. Like, they do have to kind of explain the fate of several other people.
Very interesting. All right. I have two, because I just really wanted to have two. The first one is, "It must be broken, love. I've been staring at it all day, and I think I'm even more devilishly handsome and charming than usual." And that was Hook looking into the mirror, because really, why not?
And wild surprise that you, I mean, I'm going to get crap for quoting Robin Hood. Wild surprise that you guys picked the Hook quote. So
I've been very good. I don't always pick Hook. I just thought that one was like kind of a lighthearted, fun one.
I know. I tried to avoid. I almost picked that one, and then I was like, "No, someone else."
It's so good. Yeah, but you picked Will. It's not like you steered totally clear.
I still went for
There were so many. There were a bunch of Rumple ones I really liked too. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Ingrid's past, because this episode really was focused on Ingrid's past and who she was as a character. So we initially see Ingrid and her three sisters And Ingrid kind of hangs back and stays hidden from everyone when she's at the castle because she is fearful of her magic and what it means to everybody else. So, which is kind of within the theme of what happens with Elsa in the Frozen movie, for those of us who have seen it. So what did you guys think about that whole, her relationship with her sisters?
It was interesting when it was the children actors, and I don't know if anybody else is going to have this problem, but anybody who's a Walking Dead fan, the kid who played Ingrid had this rather memorable role last season on The Walking Dead, and all I could think the entire time was, look at the flowers, look at the flowers. So I was like very distracted. If you're a Walking Dead fan, you know what I'm saying. And aside from that, I just found, like, Ingrid as a kid was, like, obnoxious and cold, I thought. I was like, really? All you sisters are going to like each other, let alone love each other? I was not feeling the sister dynamic on the young versions of themselves, like the kid versions. It was better, I felt, as, like, I guess what was supposed to be their 20-something or their teen-something versions. I liked that, but I was not feeling it on the kid versions.
Okay, did you guys find it weird that some man tried to lure them in with a kite and steal them?
Like, yeah.
Was that not really odd?
Yes.
Like, I feel like we're missing something there.
Like, it's like they're princesses. Like, would they have their own kites so they don't have to find a random one?
Or, you know, a minder, per se.
Right, or, like, palace guard, perchance. Oh, yes, let's let all three heirs to the throne get kidnapped. Yeah, exactly.
It just seemed like a very weird intro. And then she, like, knocks him out with a tree branch. So, you know, it's all good. And then with the ribbon, like, I don't understand what, like, is there, like, clearly the ribbon was supposed to mean something. That they would always stay together, that they would always be together kind of thing. But, like, I don't know.
I was not feeling it either. Like, and like I said, and originally she was kind of obnoxious about the ribbon. Like, I'm the oldest, I should have it. And then they all end up with it around their wrists and it's pretty good looking too, for considering how old that ribbon is. So, like, the ribbon hasn't been infused with the magical bond of sisterhood. Like,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. But it
I'm
took
assuming
me until
so now.
Yeah, it took me until I was like towards the end of my recap to be like, I guess that's why they're important. Like, it was not well hashed out at all.
No, but I think that's why he wanted them so much, because it was infused with the love and bonds of sisterhood.
Well, here's the thing, too. Other than the time where they go and visit Rumpelstiltskin, did we see the ribbons on their arms, like, earlier? Like, I don't remember them showing the ribbons earlier than just the initial scene where they have the ribbon, and then when they show it with Rumpelstiltskin. I felt like we needed, like, one more scene to talk about the ribbons.
Yeah, maybe they were on their wrists, like, when she was going, they were going to, like, the father's birthday party, but we just...
Right, we didn't see them. Yeah, I just felt like, they still have the ribbons, really? Like, I felt like I needed another ribbon transition in there somehow.
Perhaps. Yeah. All right, so, I mean, that's kind of, yeah. So, we have as the young girls, and then we have them as the older girls, and we see the sisters, Helga and, I always forget the second one's name.
Gerda.
Thank you. I know they're all us, except for Ingrid. So Helga and Gerda. And Helga is making friends with a lovely Duke. Now, Brittany, you have seen Frozen, correct?
Yes.
So as soon as you saw him, did you know who he was?
Absolutely.
He was
very well done up. But
he was a
major creep.
I know. So, Laura, you don't know this because you have not seen Frozen, but the Duke that Helga was being friendly with is the Duke of Wesselton. And in the movie Frozen, he comes back and he kind of wants to steal Arendelle from the girls. He's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, and he's much older, so you can
tell.
He's like the same age as their parents.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, cool.
So it's kind of like perfect. But he is just so horrible. And towards the end, when we see what happens, you kind of start to see that come out in him. So, yeah. And they call him the Duke of Weaseltown. And that's why when Helga says it, it's, like, so perfect. Because that's exactly what like the joke is in Frozen. Oh, cool. They call him the Duke of Weaselton. Yeah.
And it definitely made a lot more sense. Like, it gave him a little bit of a backstory because Frozen, he comes back and he's like, well, I am not a trade partner with this place anymore, but I'm coming because the gates are, like, the castle's being open.
Right.
So it sort of gave, put that whole thing into context, but I thought it wasn't necessary.
Cool. Yeah. I liked it. Like, not being the Frozen person, I really liked it. And I have to say, at the beginning, I didn't know if he was just merely awkward or, like, a real, like, weaselly character. Like, I thought it was played rather well. And not knowing Frozen, I kind of liked watching the transition from him being this awkward person to really just being a jerk. So I enjoyed him very much.
Yeah, see, and I think that that is a good point because you haven't seen the movie, so you enjoyed the character, whereas I thought it was just an unnecessary Frozen plug. Which I think is really interesting. I'm glad that you haven't seen Frozen, actually.
See, it didn't bother me. Like, I thought it was fun to see him and to kind of get a little backstory on him.
I don't know. I think I would have been fine if they just left him, like, you know, as a character who wanted to dance.
Yeah.
But I think I had a lot more other problems with the episode than that was probably why.
And then, like, makes sense. All right. So, moving right along, we get some scenes with the sisters as adults, and Helga and Gerda are very supportive of Ingrid, and they all travel to what do they call it? The Land of the Mist? What do they call it?
Misthaven.
Misthaven. Thank you. I'm like, wait, I know it's a two-word thing. So they call it Misthaven, and they travel there to see Rumpelstiltskin because they believe that he can help Ingrid with her powers. And Ingrid is so desperate to kind of quench her powers, to get rid of them, that she trades their ribbons, even though the other two sisters say that they're enough, that they don't need him, and trade the ribbons for the gloves. And the gloves, again, in Frozen itself, are a symbol. They're what Elsa is given when she is young to try and keep her from touching things and making them freeze. So again, it's kind of that, like, link to the movie that in the story that everyone knows. So from there, you know, Ingrid's very insistent, so they all agree that they'll do it for her. And Rumpel also gives them the urn and says, you know, one day one of you may have to use this on her. Which is kind of interesting that they took the urn anyway. Don't you think? If they were so sure.
Right. I mean, yeah, you're right. It is kind of an interesting thing, or you may have to use it. I wonder if when they took it, they felt like it was more for her protection than theirs. You know what I'm saying?
And I think that, well, they were so adamant about not having any of it. They didn't want the gloves. They didn't want to give up the ribbons, the sisters. So it was really all on Ingrid at that point. And I think she kind of sensed that they may need to use it eventually.
Yeah, I think at a certain point, too, it's easier to say yes than no. Like, I mean, he's pretty much going, here, take the urn. Like, I think it was just easier to accept it and then mentally justify it by saying, oh, well, I'm never going to use it. And then obviously they did. But I think that's part of it, too. You could just say, oh, yeah, fine, whatever. I'll just take it when it won't use this thing. And yeah, and what happened happened.
Yeah, it's kind of like one of those infomercials where you don't need the second set of steak knives, but, well, you're giving them to me, so I'm not gonna... I'll make some room on my counter.
I love it. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. All right, so moving along from there, she takes the gloves, and she's sitting in the kind of, what's it called? It has a word, and I can't remember it.
Like a gazebo. Type thing.
Thank you. Yeah. Yes, the gazebo. And she doesn't have the gloves on, which, I'm sorry, if you're going to get some gloves, yo, should you not wear them? Just throwing her out there. And Weaselton appears and kind of tries to put the moves on her because, you know, she's the oldest. So, you know, why not have the oldest daughter? Why have to wait for, you know, the other daughters, like Helga? So Weaselton puts the moves on her. Ingrid rebuffs him. And he tries to, like, freak out on Helga and lie and say that Ingrid put the moves on him when it was really him, kind of thing. So lovely Helga defends her sister and basically tells Weaselton, she calls him Weaselton, which I kind of like, to go away, that, you know, he's not worth it.
Right.
And then something really unfortunate happens. Elsa get not Elsa, excuse me. Ingrid gets very upset and she accidentally hits her sister with her ice magic and it freezes her and she's gone. And that's devastating for Ingrid. And Wesselton runs off, says he's going to tell everybody, and then Gerda appears and realizes that her sister is dead and she doesn't really take the time to listen to Ingrid or believe Ingrid. She just puts her in the urn.
So now here's the thing from me, who is Miss Not Frozen. And so obviously I watched that it was accidental. Clearly what happened was accidental. And the sister freezes and turns into a giant ice cube. And then she shatters and turns into lots of little baby ice cubes. So not having seen Frozen, and this is once upon a time where dead doesn't always mean dead, like, is that really like dead in the Frozen canon? Like,
But see, okay, here's what's different. In the movie Frozen, Anna gets hit twice with Elsa's magic. Once in the head, which is easy to change. They take her to Poppy, the troll, the rock troll, and he kind of changes her memories over so that she doesn't remember Elsa's magic. She only remembers the playing, like playing in the snow, not making the snow, so it's different. So that Anna doesn't know anything about the magic until there's an accident with it. Then later in the movie, Elsa hits Anna in the chest with the magic, and she doesn't die or turn into an ice cube like Helga did, but she becomes sick with the magic, and she does become a frozen statue eventually. But it's reversible with true love, with an act of true love.
Which in that case is sisterly love. Like, it's not like a man comes and
It's
saves them.
romantic, right? It's sisterly.
And so this is Once Upon a Time, which is, I think, very much laid a lot of groundwork for true love, not per se having to be romantic love. I mean, I think they've very much laid that groundwork with
But I
Henry and,
think the difference is that she kind of crumpled right away. The ice crumpled. In Frozen, that didn't happen. And it. From the time where Anna was hit with the ice magic to the time she became a frozen statue, two very different times. It took a very long time.
And so she was never little itty bitty ice pellets, which is obviously what
Yeah,
happened.
no, I think
that
so.
didn't happen. I think Helga's done.
Okay, that was my question. So I'm just wondering if there are going to be other people like me who are not that familiar with the Frozen canon, wondering if this is like Frosty the Snowman, like when she melts into a puddle and the magic hat comes, and can she be re resurrected, or like so. I'm curious to know if you know how this is all going to work in. Like TV Frozen canon, because you know how they like to change things, so I'm curious.
I was thinking that when they shattered her, that was the end of that. Because I think that was a very, like, even for
Absolutely.
non-frozen-y people. Because then you wouldn't know that Anna was ever really a frozen statue at one point.
Right. So, yeah, I'm just curious if they'll find a way to bend it or change it or work it out. It'll be
Yeah, I don't
interesting.
know.
We're
So,
running out of time.
I know.
Running out of Frozen episodes.
That's true. And the other thing that was really interesting was that everything that Ingrid has said to Elsa about, well, your sister did this to you. She's not really your family. She won't believe you. You know, they don't trust your magic. They're not like you. Those are all the things that happened to her. So do we think they actually happened to Elsa? Or do we think Ingrid's kind of like pushing that onto Elsa so that they can have a connection.
I think that they are pushing it on Elsa and Emma and Hook. They're trying to make everyone like outcasted this season, which I don't understand why they're doing it to so many characters. I can understand Elsa and Emma by one person. What I don't understand is why they're also playing this parallel story out with Hook at the same time and Regina, in a sense, only Regina's doing it to herself.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the season of the outcast, I guess. So from there, we have current day Ingrid, who is highly delusional at this point. Do you guys feel like she's delusional a little bit?
Like, she just, like, that's what keeps confusing me about her. Like, all right, so I understand that she had this really great sisterly bond, and now she's bitter having been shoved into the urn and whatever. And somehow she had this Emma relationship, which we still haven't explained. But clearly, like, her end goal seems to be, I want to have a happy family with Emma and I guess Elsa and maybe Anna. Like, that is what
She doesn't want Anna.
She doesn't want Anna. So I'm just confused. Like, when she gets, in theory, what she wants, so now what happens? Like, I just feel like she's still going to be psychotic. Like, I don't understand what the goal of her end game is, really.
Well, I think when she has Emma and Elsa, she's planning on using the mirror to turn everyone else on each other. So she wants Storybrooke, as we saw when she went to Rumple. So
right.
She just wants to, like, obliterate Storybrooke.
Oh, yeah, no, I totally agree. Like, that does seem what she wants. But I'm just, like, assuming that plays out, like, what does she do once everything is a frozen wilderness and now you're there with, like, Emma and Elsa? Like, how does that work? Like, I'm confused.
Yeah, and we saw how well Emma can handle the cold already, so that's not going to help. They need a summer home somewhere.
Well,
that's a good question.
Well, Emma can build him a little torch now, I guess. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It just seems really strange. Like, I really still don't know what the end game is, other than she basically told Rumple that she wants Storybrooke for her and her sisters, or her new family that she's concocting. And I'm not really sure how she thinks that she's going to be able to keep them as a family.
Yeah, they're not going to be, they're just going to be isolated.
Yeah. It's
she's weird. Not willing to have anyone else around her, but I will say she is brilliant, a brilliant actress to be able to deliver all of this crazy so calmly. And, like, just, she gets under my skin. I don't know about you guys, but she just, like, every time she talks so calm, like, so what do you want to talk about? I was like, oh, she's so good.
Yeah, she is. It feels like a master manipulation. Because it's so calm, and it's so quiet, and it's so, do you know what I mean? You're not expecting the evil that lurks within, or the delusion that lurks within, because there's a lot of delusion.
Yeah, because even when Emma's like, well, we know what you're doing with the mirror, and we know what you're doing with this, and I know what you want to do, and I know about your family, and she's like, okay, great. So glad you know. Now, what's left for us to discuss here?
Right.
She just sits there.
Yeah, she does not play into to Emma's hand at all. She just leaves it very open so that Emma can make assumptions that aren't true. You know, I don't know. So, and then, of course, we talked about how she wants to make the realm forget them. Or, I'm sorry, no, I misspoke. Gerda, the last scene we see in all of Emma's, Ingrid's backstory is that Gerda wants to make the realm forget because she lost both her sisters on that day. So this is kind of where we get Frozen from, because Gerda goes to Grandpappy and he comes up with a potion that will make everyone forget that she had sisters. That's really strong magic.
Yes. And she, and it's clear that, like, Anna's DNA is coming, like, right from her. Like, and looking how she's stylized and everything there.
Yeah.
It's like Elsa's the recessive gene child or something, which I also thought was, like, very strange. Yeah, it was, and, like, the troll, like, who, by the way, my husband calls the roly-poly lichen people. I find them very annoying. He finds them very annoying too. And he will watch Once Upon a Time with me, and he actually does kind of like and enjoy Once Upon a Time. He is finding the roly-poly rock people really annoying, and I have to say I am too. I'm like, what is it with the rock people? Although I will say I do find the reindeer and what is his name? Hans? Fritz? What is the other guy?
Christoph.
All right. Whatever. The guy in the Lederhosen. I find them kind of like really more annoying. But the rock people, I'm like, all right, whatever. I'm curious if the rock people are going to like roll into, I don't know, Storybrooke. I don't know. I looked at the whole scene and I'm like, all right, we're going to curse everybody. Everybody's memory's going away. It's sort of like a Sleeping Beauty thing. But it was like, oh, come on, guys, stop making it more complicated on yourself. That was my thing.
Yes. So anyway, I'll be interested to see how that magic, because you want to make the realm forget, and I feel like that could come up again.
So here's the thing, does the Grandpappy or whatever his name is, yep. Do we feel like his magic is on the same level as, say, like Regina's magic or Emma's magic? Like, how much magic does, because again, I don't know Frozen, like how much, yeah, like how much magic does this dude wield?
Well, actually, I feel like they've been showing a lot more of their abilities in Once Upon a Time than they have in Frozen.
Okay.
See, Frozen, all you knew was that they could change Anna's memories, and there wasn't really anything that they could do for Elsa. So basically, his magic is based on memory magic.
Okay, because I was, again, not being a Frozen person, that was not clear to me.
I mean, even in this, really, the only thing we've seen him do is memory magic.
Yeah, because he has Belle's memory.
Right. So his is very specific.
Okay.
Powerful, but very specific.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk a little bit about Rumple. We already mentioned this a little bit, but him wanting the ribbons, and then him keeping the ribbons perfectly tied in bows in a box. Like, doesn't that seem weird?
Well, he's like a collector of
magical
things. So, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
They don't really know what they want to do with him.
Right. I didn't have a problem with him keeping it and collecting it. Like, I feel like if he did collect something, it would be pristine. Like, everything he has is pristine. And I think since we've decided that Rumple has not really redeemed himself, I still think he's holding on to everything in that shop for like the rainy day when he may need it, and he's going to pull the favor out. So I don't think he's letting anything go for free. Not really. Nothing that's like very powerfully magical. And I clearly felt like those were very powerfully magical and rare, because he made it very clear that they were magic infused with a sisterly bond that's so rare. So I feel like this is definitely one of like the higher end items in his store that he would not be very willing to part with at all.
And why do you think Ingrid wants them back so badly? Because now she's ready to make a deal. Do you know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden she is ready to make a deal, and what she wants to deal for is the ribbon.
I personally think it's because she has turned Emma enough to where she can approach her, and maybe since she's trying to get them both on her side, like they all have to be wearing the ribbons at some point, and that will like bond them.
Oh, that could be. That's a good idea.
Somehow, because if she's turned Emma, like she can cross Emma off her list as of right now, from what we've seen at the end of the episode. So she just needs to get to Elsa a little more. And then I think that she might be able to, even if they're not willing to, if she gets the ribbons on them.
Yeah, I had a feeling the ribbons were more like a, if you get it on the person, then they belong to you kind of thing.
Yeah, like the sisterly bond to be reenacted.
Yeah, that concerned me a little bit for Emma and Elsa's sake.
Also, they're not that nice. Like, I wish they were a little fancier, like a necklace or something.
It's like a yellow ribbon.
Yellow ribbon.
Yeah, from the creeper's kite, for God's sake.
I know.
Anyway, so we see... We learn in this, when Ingrid goes to make her deal, that what Rumple needs more than anything, or what Rumple wants to do more than anything, is separate himself from the dagger. That's big, kids. If he can separate himself from that dagger, there is trouble on the horizon.
Right, because that's the only thing keeping him in check. I mean, he essentially still ends up being the most powerful being ever, right? Assuming he separates that is essentially what happens. Yeah.
Yeah, and right now he's, like they were saying in the episode, like he's contained to Storybrooke because they all know what type of power he has. But once that dagger is gone, like he is pretty much unstoppable.
Oh my gosh. It's
terrifying.
Yeah, it really is. Like, I'm like dying for Bay to like rise from the grave and like go, what the heck is your problem? Have you learned nothing? Like, it's just, I'm so frustrated with him.
There's some small thread of hope in me that the reason he's doing all this stuff to get rid of the dagger is so that he can not have to live with that thought of death and everything that comes with a dagger kind of thing. But, I mean, I don't know. Does he end up losing his power if he separates himself from the dagger, though? Like, is that an option, do you think?
It might be. I mean, yeah, I could see that.
It could be something that comes up. That's actually a pretty good thing to think about. It could be something that comes up at the moment where he has everything and he realizes that if he separates himself from the dagger, that's it. So that could be interesting.
That would be an intriguing little ploy now, wouldn't it? So yeah, that's something definitely to keep on the radar, because I think the separating himself from the dagger will carry well into the second half of the season.
Yeah, I agree. Think
that's going to be end game for the season, because that's a big deal.
Yeah, I just want to know what that thing is, and if she's dying or not.
I know, because, like, it sounds like it's a person, doesn't it?
It sounds like, well, what he needs to do, he wants to do with great pleasure.
I know.
I just have a feeling he has to kill Hook, and it's really
scary. I had my worries about Hook. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like someone's death is imminent.
There will be rioting if it is Hook. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yes,
I feel like they've laid the ground that people would be okay with Rumble dying. Like, I think he's killing fans by the moment, literally. So I don't know, and clearly Hook is on to him because he's still going crocodile. What are you doing? What do you want? So, yeah, I certainly feel like a showdown is brewing at the very least.
Yeah, and I think that they've done a great job of setting up how Emma has lost everyone. I mean, it's been a long, long, difficult haul for fans, but everyone has died. And if she gives up her powers, as the promo kind of showed, and Hook is in the one in grave danger later on, it's going to be a nightmare.
Right.
Well, not only that, but, like, can they really take Hook from Emma? Like, really, what will that do to Emma? Do you know what I mean? Like, as you've said, we've already made the big deal that she's lost everybody. Could you really, like, as show creators, take Hook from her and, like, I mean, think about it. That would be really bad.
Yeah, I
that would make almost like Emma the next villain, I think, if they did that. It would almost have to.
Really interesting.
It could be. But I already had to give up the Huntsman. If I have to give up Hook too, things are not going to be okay.
Yeah.
Just want to be clear. Okay. So there's some things to look forward to, I think, in the 2-hour finale, or mid-season finale, and then the start of the next 11-episode arc, because, yeah. I don't know. I just feel like there's so much. All right, so moving on to Emma. What did you guys think about her power surge? All of a sudden, Emma is the all-powerful.
I felt like, clearly, the Snow Queen did something. I don't know what she did, how she did it, or she amplified Emma's powers in some way. I mean, clearly, there's something the Snow Queen did to get things out of control, because I don't think that Emma, I mean, and I would say that Rumple later on certainly intimates that she did something to cause all this to happen. So I don't know what the Snow Queen did, but she did something to cause this to Emma.
I kind of thought that initially, but again, this is one of those things where I shouldn't look on Tumblr till I form my own opinions. But they were like, there's a huge parallel between when Rumple's explaining to Hook, like, that his hand was never cursed. Like, it was always in his head. So I think that Emma is able to channel a different type of magic, like, you know, by thinking about it too much. Whereas when she was, like, training with Regina, it was when, like, in last season when they cut the bridge and, like, Emma needed to save them and, like, use her magic, or that was it.
Right.
Like, I think it's kind of, like, got into that headspace subconsciously, and that's, like, how her powers became what they were.
Yeah. It's interesting. Rumble actually tells the Snow Queen, "As someone who's created many monsters in his time, I'm impressed by the number you did on Miss Swan."
Yeah. So clearly she's got something to do with it.
Yeah.
Clearly she's got some, I mean, it's beyond just being a head game, because I think Emma would have resisted just the head game if there wasn't some sort of physical manifestation. So clearly she's pulled something off. As to what she pulled off exactly, who knows?
Yes, it's all very interesting.
You know what I thought was
about? Go ahead.
I was just saying, when everything happened too with you know, because like Emma then comes out, you know, and the building's falling apart and her family's there. And Snow, you know, has the whole mother instinct. I mean, first she yanked the baby away earlier when she was boiling the milk unexpectedly. And then, you know, and then the lamppost comes crashing down. And I was just like, oh, my gosh, David saved Hook. Like, first of all, I was like, props to David because he pushed Hook out of the way. But I didn't, I mean, maybe I wasn't interpreting it right, but I didn't feel like David was looking at her with, like, blame or alarm. I felt like David was just, like, he was hurt and he was getting up and he was like, whoa, what happened? But I didn't feel like he was scared of Emma. Did you guys feel like David, I mean, I felt like Snow was scared of Emma, but I didn't feel like David was scared of Emma.
I felt like Snow was the only one out of all of them who was scared, which would be the person to hurt her the most, because even Henry was, like, calling after her. He wasn't running away from her or anything.
Yeah, no, he was more like, whoa, what's going on? Not like, oh, my God, I'm terrified of my mother. Like,
The reality with Snow is that's her mother. Her mother just had a baby that replaces her. You know, she made the comment about, well, what do you know about mothering? You put your only child into a wardrobe and sent them away. Like, there's always been that tension between Snow and Emma, whereas she and David have a much better relationship.
Right.
It's not the same. So it's that mother-daughter bond that's already fractured in so many ways that I think, so now that you've come to this point, when Snow makes those comments, they're going to cut Emma the deepest.
Yeah, and right. I think that's because, why they played up the mommy and me part earlier, was because it showed that, like, that's the relationship that she really cares about, not having that fear mixed in.
Right, right. So, I don't know. We'll see about how that plays out in the next episode as well, because I think that's going to be a big part of the things as we continue to move forward. All right, Laura, are you ready?
Yes, of course. I am ready.
Okay. So now we're going to talk a little bit about Robin, but we're going to start with Robin and Will, because that's where all of this starts, really. So, first of all, can we have more Robin and Will on the screen together?
Oh my gosh, I loved
like, all
them.
The time.
They were great. But that was like, I said like way back, I think at one point we were talking about like, what are we really dying to see that we haven't seen yet? And I remember saying, I want to see Robin and Will like talk and put all their cards on the table, because there's obviously history there. So I was like really, really happy to get that scene, very much so we could see a little bit about them. And I really loved the whole dart thing. I thought that was like a really,
that was great.
Yeah, that was very good. And I kind of loved how they sort of resolved where they're at. But you feel like they're going to talk again. I want to see them become chums, and I want to see that develop more. And you both kind of got the sense that they were two guys coming from a place of hurt, and they were each trying to say sorry.
Yeah, I liked what happened there a lot.
Yeah, I liked it too. I love that they kind of called back to Wonderland for those who had seen it, but it didn't separate anyone who hadn't. Like, you know that Will was a part of the Merry Men. He did something wrong, which was to steal from Maleficent a while ago and almost like kill everyone in Robin's little band of Merry Men.
Right.
But this, it was to get the woman that he loved and get her out of the situation that she was currently in, which was not happy with the life she gave up because she wanted to be with the thief.
Right. And we get the impression that clearly it didn't work out.
Yeah.
Like, so I'm, and the way that I'm interpreting it is despite, I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but the way that I'm interpreting it of despite how the events of Wonderland panned out in the last couple of episodes, like, they didn't get their happily ever after. That's how I'm playing it. Like, they, despite of what happened to sort of resolve things at the end, they go their separate ways. That was my interpretation.
See, yeah. I couldn't decide if that was really what they were trying to say, or if this is pre-Wonderland. Because if you think about it, it fits for pre-Wonderland because Will does all this stuff and then she goes off and marries the king.
Right.
That was why I was confused, because I'm like, well, it fits either, like, either, that's why I wanted more. I needed him to tell me more. When he just says, oh, yeah, it didn't work out. I'm like, okay, but what time frame are we in for you, Will Scarlet? Like, what the heck?
Yeah, because he is in Storybrooke during the first curse, is the first episode of Wonderland.
Right.
So, yeah, time frame would be key. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
So that's what's so hard about it. I'm just like, I don't know.
Well, because then when they cross back into the real world for the wedding at the end of Wonderland, they're like back in Victorian England. So I don't really know what's going on.
Right, right. So I'm curious. Exactly. So now here's my other thing that I have a question on. So like he's sitting there with Robin and he's having this heart to heart. And I love how they're having this talk at the countertop at Granny's. It's almost like they're having a conversation at a bar, but it's not really the bar. And he's talking about, did I ever tell you the story? And he's like 3 dozen times. And he's like, he goes on again. He's like 3 dozen and 1. And Robin is telling this story about how he was a guy with flaws and he was basically just a common thief and he didn't care who he stole from. And then Marion made him a better person, and from that day on, he was stealing from the rich and giving to the poor. And Will talks about how much Marion gave up to be with Robin, that she was actually from, you know, noble birth, and she gave all that up to be with him. And all right, so is it just me projecting, or did I feel like Robin was saying almost like he wasn't in love with Marion, he was more grateful to her than anything else for changing his life than being truly in love? Was anybody else getting that as a subtext undercurrent or
at this
what?
Point, I think it was that it wasn't that he didn't love her anymore. There's always going to be something shared between them, but at this point in time, because you have to remember, this is the other thing with Robin. Robin lived without Marion, believing Marion was dead for quite a long time.
Oh, for like 3 years. Yeah, like it was
so,
3 years. Yeah.
I think that's where his conflict comes from, is that in your mind, you've let go. You've said your goodbyes. You've done what you needed to do, and you've moved past that. You've found something else that you've wanted, and then to have that reemerge in your life, how do you switch back? Like, how do you know?
Do you know what movie it reminded me of? Like earlier today when I was thinking, because this has been like in my head for like the whole past 24 hours, it reminded me a little bit of that Tom Hanks movie Castaway, where he's got this girlfriend and then he ends up on the desert island and then eventually he comes back to, gets rescued and comes back to civilization, but like a number of years have passed and the girl who he was either / married to or in a relationship with has now moved on and married somebody else because she thought he was dead. So, yeah, I think it's sort of, it is, it's interesting. It's like, it's still a conflict, but you could see how, like, I know that's how I'm justifying the fact that I want him to be with Regina, because he got over this and it was 3 years ago and he put those feelings aside, or at least that's how I'm justifying it in my own mind.
But I don't even think it needs to be a justification. I think it's an actuality. You know, when you... Right. When you're in love with someone and that someone is gone from your life and you think they're never coming back, like it was severed.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not even like it was presumed dead, like missing.
No.
It was like dead, dead.
It was dead.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to be said for that. He didn't have to worry about leaving that door partially open. That door was slammed in his face. That was no longer an option. So it's a very conflicting thing because, you know, he still has a wife. And yes, should he love his wife? Yeah. But at the same time, it's not like he's technically cheating on his wife.
Right.
Because his wife was dead to him for 3 years. Like, legitimately dead. So when he finally moved on, the wife reemerges. And that is, that's a whole other set of circumstances.
Right.
Yeah, and I thought that this bar scene, like, I know you were saying, like, am I just projecting? I thought it was him having to say it out loud to someone, like a random third party who just happened to know the story, and work it out for himself, because there's really no one that he could talk to about this.
That's
and,
a
like,
good
try
point.
And lay it out.
Yeah, really, other than Will, because, I mean, and you get the point that before Will left, they were obviously very, very close. So that's a really good point. Okay.
Yeah, and he was able to see, like, I felt that the conversation, when he was saying it out loud, the words that were coming, the advice that was coming from Will and the moral of the story that Robin was saying could apply to either Marion or Regina, and it was just now a matter of which pull he felt stronger.
Right. And it's clearly a decision that's torturing him. Like, I feel mm-hmm. like even in both scenes that he has with Regina, the one that's at the beginning of the episode and then the later episode that he has after he talks with Will, I think in absolutely both cases, you can absolutely physically see the internal conflict that he is going through. I mean, he just looks angst-ridden and in pain and run through the ringer, like in both cases.
Especially in the first scene when she is saying, then what are you doing here? And he's just like, I just can't find, like, he wants to, you can tell he wants to tell her that he loves her, but he just, like, has to, like, stifle that down and say, I just don't know
right,
what I'm doing.
Right, because he's fighting with that internal code.
Yeah, and that, I thought that was, like, beautifully acted, too, because, like, you really wanted to just be like, oh, it's okay.
Right.
Calm down.
Right.
You're gonna be fine.
Right. I agree with all of that. I think there's a lot to be said for Robin's conflict and him trying to, like, kind of parse out the difference between what's right in a situation and what's right for him.
Right.
Because there's definitely a difference, you know?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that continues to play out if you get defrosted Marion.
Right. All I know is I'm sailing on team forget the popsicle wife. I just I'm sailing on team forget the popsicle. I know that's so bad, but that's where I'm at.
No,
so.
when that kiss happened, I was like, I didn't know I needed this, but I did.
But that's exactly what this episode needed.
Oh,
I didn't know I needed Robin and Regina, to be together. But yep, I did. I did.
Yeah,
to
I was just like, and the other thing too is I'm betting, because again, the whole thing about true love, I'm betting it's Roland's kiss that saves Marion.
Oh, that'll be cute.
That would be cute. It'll be interesting. Can't wait to see how that plays out. So, something else to look forward to, hopefully, in the 2-hour season, mid-season finale next week, because there's so much I feel like they need to squeeze into those 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, does Frozen storyline have to be resolved?
Oh, please, because I'm getting a little tired of it, to just be honest with you. I passed the Disney store the other day, and it was more like the Frozen store. So I just feel like, I mean, I get it. It's popular. It's a good tie-in, but I've kind of had enough.
Yeah, but I am going to point out, I know we've been saying this, it is not the mid-season finale.
Oh, it's not? Oh, I'm so sorry.
It is not. We have 2 hours this week, and then we have Fall, Shattered Sight, and Heroes and Villains left. So
there's three more.
Yeah, we don't stop until December 14th.
Oh, okay. So for some reason, I think it's because there are a couple other shows that I watch that are mid-season finales already, which is super annoying. I'm like, it's only the second week in November. How can it be a mid-season? Maybe that's why I got mis-
Yeah, no, this, so the reason is because it's November sweeps. So I think that they pushed, like, Smash the Mirror. They're taking episodes 9 and 8 and smashing them together.
Yeah.
And they're just renaming the rest of them because
it's down to commercial revenue, which is just it's so stupid that they still do Sweeps Week because they could do this so many other ways. But anyway, never mind.
But yeah, so that's what's happening.
Got it. Okay, sorry. Totally.
Plenty of time for the Frozen people to hang out.
Yeah, because I was like, it seems like it was too quick. Like,
yeah, they're also still filming with the Frozen people on set. So.
Oh wow! Really?
Yeah, they're almost done.
I was gonna say.
We're gonna be frozen for a while. I don't want to say that I don't want to see the Frozen characters ever again. I'm just looking for not so much of the forefront or having other people come in. Like, a good example of that was this episode where we had sleeping, because the Mommy and Me class, like, that was Sleeping Beauty with her baby at the Mommy and Me class, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I don't need them to forever go away. I'm just looking for the Frozen aspect not to be so at the forefront of the storytelling.
Right. Well, the thing that was so funny about the Baby and Me class, because I actually have that on our list of random thoughts to talk about, was that Cinderella was running it.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Maybe the older.
Yeah, that should be a toddler. Maybe they have more children.
He's a little big. Like, it's bigger than in comparison to Neil.
Right.
But he's not as large as a
should be, like, almost two now.
Yeah. maybe it's the second baby. Who knows?
Right. So, but I thought that was so funny that we had, like, Princess Baby and Me class.
I know.
Princess and then Air class.
Did you see the little child dressed in the Mickey Mouse outfit?
I so did. So ridiculous. Yeah, so we had Aurora and Cinderella, and yeah, it was pretty funny, actually. So I like that. So here are a couple other random thoughts / questions, really. What happens to the gloves? Because Gerda picks them up, but what happens to them?
Oh.
Maybe those are the gloves that Gerda gives to Elsa, but like in the animated version that we
That's what I'm thinking, because they look like the same gloves.
Yeah, they
that's
look
why I was like, well, hold up, how come grown-up Elsa doesn't have those puppies?
Yeah, so Laura,
does she let it go? Like, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, I was gonna say during the like Do You Want to Build a Snowman song, they give her a pair of gloves.
Yes, they do.
What are these? Maybe they'll help. And I think that those are them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I don't know where they are now or why. I don't know. It's funny that Gerda kept them, though. You know what I mean? Like, the little things. It's the little things. Yeah. All right. So next one. Why is there only one magical person per family?
Now, I saw this, and I immediately thought of Regina and Cora. Because they are two.
Yes, but Cora was not always magical.
She learned it.
That is true.
She learned magic, as did Regina. Her magic is not inherent.
So maybe there's something about teaching versus inherent magic.
At least that's the way I'm looking at it. And that's my other question was, why isn't she looking for Regina to be her sister? Because Regina is super powerful. But at the same time, I realized that reason is probably because Regina's not magic from birth.
Yeah, and right. I think it's an issue of control.
Right.
Too, like, because Regina has such a control over her magic, and it's never been out of control for her.
True.
So she, like, doesn't have that personality trait, I guess you could say, of, like, needing to have somewhere to turn to when her family doesn't understand, because her mother understood, like, she knew what Regina had, like, or what Regina was learning, and Regina just never really had a good family, though.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know, the whole born of magic thing is, like, one per generation.
Yeah, no, I was thinking of Neil, because if Emma's magic is because she's the result of true love, isn't Neil gonna show some magic?
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's possible.
It would be so cool if, like, we see, like, baby Neil, like, have, like, telekinetics or something and start sending his, like stuffed animals around the room or something like that.
Yeah, like a little, like, Matilda or something.
Yeah, that would be really funny.
Yeah. Matilda was just on TV, so.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't know. So it'll be interesting to see if it's really only one per family or what the deal is with that, because that's something I noticed. Because you have Emma, who has magic naturally, you have Elsa, who has magic naturally, and Ingrid, who has magic naturally, but none of their other family members have magic. So is there something else there that's connecting them, or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Rumpel, if you think about it. But Rumpel's, again, is earned from the dagger.
Right.
He wasn't born
that. He had nothing until he had that dagger, absolutely.
You're right. I don't know why. Because I was thinking of lineage. I'm like, okay.
Right. No, I get it. No, it's confusing. Try to switch. Yeah.
Now there's a whole other family tree that we have to mark off different things on. Has magic. Learned magic.
Because that's the other thing. Zelina was also someone who was born. From birth, she had magic.
Yeah, and Regina didn't.
Right. So, from Regina's family, Zelina was the one with the magic.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Just something to think about, because I feel like that's going to come into play later. For some reason. It seems like an odd thing to have so prevalent and not address it.
No, I think that's a really, really interesting point and something I'm going to be spending some time with this weekend.
You're like, All right. So do you guys have anything else? Any other thoughts or?
I just have one random thing.
Go for it.
I think this is just a theory that I came up with earlier today while I was at work. I think that Ingrid didn't erase Emma's memories, but she made them up.
Oh, that could be true.
I like it.
I don't think that she was ever her foster mother.
So that's why Emma truly can't remember anything, because clearly it never happened.
Yeah, there's something where she, like, magically turns up with Grandpappy and, like, ends up being able to find something. I really thought that they felt a little too jagged and out of place, and I don't think that Ingrid would have spent that much time in, like, the regular world just right. to look at Emma for a year. Because it was only a year. I felt that last week it was a much longer time, but this week they just kept saying a year, a year, a year, and I was like, that seems too short for that type of bond, and then for it to go away.
Right.
Right. So that's an interesting thought, too. I like it. That has a lot of potential. It doesn't explain Elsa's memories, which could have easily been wiped out by Grandpappy, yeah. but interesting. I like it. Or if somehow she got her hands on the potion that Grandpappy had made for the realm to wipe out their memories before,
mm-hmm.
that could be an option, too. She could have used that on them.
Yeah, I just feel like she's very six steps ahead of everyone.
Yes.
At this point.
Yeah, except for Rumple, who knows far too much.
Yeah, but he is pulling, like, him and Belle are just like, oh, I don't know anything. Don't look in my direction.
So true. Ridiculousness. All right, so does that wrap up this episode, you guys? You think you're good?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. So until next week, where obviously the podcast is going to probably be twice as long because we're going to have so much to discuss with a double episode, we will talk to you guys then. And of course, if you guys have any theories, thoughts, or any insight to any of the things we brought up, always leave comments on the podcast or tweet us at Once Upon News. And of course, follow Brittany for all her amazing Once Upon a Time news, which she posts like daily because there's so much of it. So until next time, I'm Jen.
I'm Laura.
And I'm Brittany.
Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye.